Welcome back to the Audio Academy podcast. I'm your host, Georgie Jameson, and this week our guest is Chloe Straw. Chloe was CEO at Audio UK for 4.5 years and recently left that role to join Goalhanger as their Director of Operations. Whilst at Audio UK, they lobbied to get podcasting a seat on the Creative Industries Council. They succeeded, and Chloe is currently on the council, so I asked her to explain what the CIC is and what her role is on it.
I guess it's a slightly weird time for me because I've recently left as the CEO of Audio UK and I started as Director of Operations at Goalhanger at the start of this year. Creative Industries Council role is very attached to the Audio UK role, if that makes sense.
Yes,
so
yeah.
I'll explain a bit more about it and kind of why that is. But I think the context is really useful. So I actually wrote down the blurb of the Creative Industries Council so I could do it some justice. But the overview is that it was established in 2011 and the aim is that it provides a formal platform for collaboration between industry and government. So its primary goal is to ensure that the UK's creative industries remain globally competitive and continue to contribute significantly to the national economy. I think what's really nice about the Creative Industries Council is it acts as a strategic partnership rather than a regulatory body. So it's very much about the industry having an opportunity to consult on the creative industries and input their expertise into government. And I think that's really important. There are a lot of chairs and they sort of change all the time. And in fact, Tim Davey has recently been announced as the new chair from later in the year. It's jointly led by government industries. So at the moment, the chairs are Lisa Nandy, who's obviously the culture secretary, Peter Kyle, business secretary, Shruti Vadera, who's industry co-chair, and Peter Bazalgette. And so Tim will be the kind of new industry co-chair. It's really interesting. And I'll talk a little bit more about kind of the makeup of it and the different members. It helps kind of work with government to shape policy and address challenges faced by the industry. So that could be advising the UK government on issues affecting creative businesses, supporting economic growth. Obviously, it's incredibly important and something the government's really committed to is economic growth around the creative industries, which is fabulous. Promoting innovation and skills development, encouraging international trade and investment, which is incredibly important for the UK as well. We have such great cultural exports and it allows us such an enormous amount of soft power and we want to make the most of that. And also fostering diversity and inclusion across creative professions. So it does a lot and it is a massive group of people. I was sort of amazed by how big it is. I think they've made it bigger as well. I am a member of the Creative Industries Council. I sit on the Creative Industries Council and that means that there is a meeting, I think it's once every 6 months, where everyone comes together and there's members right across the creative industries. So I just noted down a few, so including the British Fashion Council, YouTube, British Film Institute, the Design Council, the Music Publishers Association. So what's wonderful is it's this opportunity for people right at the top of their different industries to come together and to have a kind of open forum to help advise the government. I think one of the main things that's interesting about the Creative Industry Council is you also have a lot of subgroups and those are the places that the work really happens because, you know, once every 6 months in a room with sort of 30 other creative leaders is quite a big ask. So I also sit on the Innovation and R&D subgroup, which is really good. And that's very much about pushing forward the creative industries, how we finance innovation, how we finance creative startups, how we do research and development and so on. Just to go right back to the start though, one of the things that we were really proud of is throughout my tenure at Audio UK, getting a seat on the Creative Industries Council for podcasting and audio was a really key focus point for us. So we had a lot of different focus points, but before Audio UK got a seat on the council, there was no seat for podcasting and audio. And so we ran a massive campaign, which was run really well by Hannah Brankin, who's Audio UK's policy lead, and Katie Bannum, who does marketing memberships. They ran a kind of incredible campaign to lobby to get a seat on the council. And we tried before and not managed it. And I think it was just fantastic. And what was really nice about it, which is common across the audio industry, is that everyone everyone sort of came together. So, you know, a lot of the different networks ran our advert. So Goalhanger did, Wondery, Persephonica put it on their podcast, and Sony did it on their podcast. And there was a huge amount of, there was kind of an open letter that had 400 different individuals and businesses to sign it. And it was a really nice example of making sure that podcasts and audio was kind of at the forefront of creative industries.
I think this is the key. Podcasting now has that seat on the council. It's been recognised alongside all those other genres that you mentioned. TV is on there as well, video and games, film, music, arts, you know, and audio wasn't represented. And now it is. How important do you feel it is that podcasting has got this seat on the council?
I mean, I think it's incredibly important. Many of us became frustrated that it didn't, because it's obviously such a hugely innovative and growth area for the UK and globally. And I think there was a tipping point for me when Chris Bryant, when he was at DCMS, started a podcast, DCMS podcast, and podcasting still didn't have a seat on the Creative Industries Council at that time. And I think that sent me over the edge, because I was like, oh, we'd have all these conversations and they'd be like, oh, and, you know, not sure. And I was like, got your own podcast, but you won't recognize us as creative industry. Like, it became a sort of absurd joke. I've not been involved in it for long enough. And it is important for me to note, actually, that the seat sits with Audio UK, not with me. So I'm doing it for the moment. But obviously, Audio UK have announced new CEO, which is brilliant. So it will pass to Chris Bourne. You just have to go through a few checks. So I'm sort of starting it off and babysitting it. But one of the reasons it sits with Audio UK is because obviously it's the industry body across kind of podcasting, radio, audiobooks. There are some commercial seats on there, but we felt like it was better to stay with Audio UK. We know that podcasting is such a vibrant industry. It brings an enormous amount of money and skills and jobs into the UK. It's an incredible global export. For other creative industries to be part of that, and for podcasting and audio not to be, it felt like a huge oversight. And I'm really proud that we got a seat on the council. Had a nice moment when I went to the first meeting where someone we'd been lobbying said, oh, well done. We had a lot of lobbying and not everyone got a seat and podcasting did. So I think that was like a real sign about the kind of importance of it and the recognition as a key creative industry.
As you mentioned, that campaign to get the seat on the council was spearheaded by Audio UK, and you were their CEO for just over 4.5 years. But now you've moved, and this is the second of the jobs, Director of Operations at Goalhanger.
Yeah.
Tell us a bit about that role, because you've only been in the job 3 months or so.
Yeah. Gosh, so much to tell you. So my background before Audio UK had always been commercial. I don't mean like straight sales commercial, but I'd always worked in independent commercial businesses. My kind of career, once I'd stopped working in pubs and shops and working out what I wanted to do, started at something else, which was, I guess, one of the original independent production businesses. I think when I started there, you either got a job in commercial radio or you got a job at the BBC. And then there was this like really weird thing called an independent production business, and no one really understood what they did. And that was my first kind of audio job, I guess, was at something else. So I did that. And then I went to We Are Grape, and I've always worked either in production or as head of content and production. But a lot of my work as part of those roles has always been very business focused, business strategy, operations. One of the kind of nicest things about Goalhanger was it felt like coming home. I kind of absolutely loved Audio UK. It was brilliant. It's a smaller organization in terms of the number of us who were there. We did a lot of remote working, which was great at the time. But what's been my sort of greatest pleasure with Goalhanger is the team who work there. We're all in the office together most of the time. There's about 80 to 90 of us at the moment. And it's just sort of the vibrancy and the teams that make the content and the teams who edit the content. There's kind of this huge passion. It felt very reminiscent of previous businesses I've worked at, which was lovely in terms of the positivity. But obviously with a kind of 2026 lens on it, when the industry is very different. And, you know, there's a lot more opportunity now for independent businesses than there was when I used to work with something else, when effectively you were at the beck and call of commissioners kind of before podcasting existed.
Tell me about what a director of operations does then. Because I'm obsessed with people's job titles. I love a job title. But I really like to kind of drill down and find out what a day in the life of a director. I mean, Goalhanger is huge, isn't it? I mean, it is... It's a phenomenon.
And yeah, it's amazing.
When you look at the top 10 podcasts of the day, it dominates in a relatively short space of time compared with other independent production companies. Like you say, like Something Else, he was one of the forerunners. Goalhanger swept in and changed the game, really.
And swept up.
So what is a day in the life of director of operations of this phenomenon like?
The behind the scenes. This is a rare insight into behind the scenes.
That's what we want.
It's corny, but every day is different. First of all, it probably is worth me saying that obviously it's gone from startup to a scale up incredibly quickly, which is exciting. Like, I love the startup vibe, the sort of passion that you get with people. And I think what's really lovely about Goalhanger is that, you know, you see the passion of the teams. You know, we had on Restless Politics, has got an interview with Zelensky this week. Absolutely incredible interview. They've worked so hard to get that interview. Beautiful execution, incredible teamwork, absolutely wonderful. And that is what Goalhanger is good at. We work incredibly well at creating beautiful content. The passion of the teams, all the different areas of the business work really well. So obviously there's the show side, the editorial side, the video side, the commercial side, and they're just really great, specialized, high-functioning teams. And I think my role is about bringing all those teams together. So they work really well together, but just making sure that it's a bit more formalized in terms of how they work with each other. A day could be I have a exec team meeting, then I do some interviews. We're recruiting for a lot of roles at the moment, so I might do some exec producer interviews. Then I meet with my operations team to make sure that they're happy delivering what they need to deliver that week. Then, you know, someone wants a quick coffee, so you have a coffee with them. Then you plot out some operational strategy around things that you want to deliver coming up. One of the big projects that I work on at the moment is obviously we've got the World Cup in New York coming up with Netflix and the rest is football team.
Yeah, they're all going to go over there, aren't they?
Yeah, really exciting. And that's being run by John, who runs the rest is football, and Lainey, who's the production executive on that. But obviously that's an absolutely, you know, huge project with an amazing client. And so making sure that like they're all happy and checking in with them. There's just, I think I'm fortunate because I get to be a part of all the different areas of the business, which is a privilege. It's very lucky. But yeah, I think the point of that is I don't have any answer to what I do. It's really enjoyable. I love it. Very exciting. It's also very typical of me. Like, it's very on brand for me to be like, oh, we do 40,000 things, because that's, you know, that's always been the way that I work. I'm not sure if it's the most efficient way, but it is the way that I do it. So
the business is expanding all the time. And I think in just the last couple of years, the amount of podcasts, the extra resties that are being made from the original history and then football and then money joined and now there's a science. And I mean, there's just
science, classified, entertainment. Yeah, there's a huge amount of them. I think part of the reason I was drawn to Goalhanger, so actually, interestingly, I said that I would never go back to work in a production business, not because I had wonderful experiences at Something Else, wonderful experiences at Grape, but I had come off about 15 years of repeatedly pitching for business. And at the time, budgets were small, worked with amazing people, but there was something about relentlessly pitching to briefs.
It's exhausting though, isn't it?
Yeah. And also it's based on one or two people's perception of what's right. And so when I went to Audio UK, obviously I loved the business side of what I did and that was why I wanted to do that. But it was also like, just need a bit of a break from, you know, relentlessly pitching ideas. And when I did that, I was like, I'm never going to go back into production. I think the thing about Goalhanger is like, it's not a production business. Obviously, the core of what we do is production, but there's so much innovation. And I have to do a shout out to Jack and Tony, who are the co-founders, who are wonderful, really hands-on, but just like trying new things all the time. You sort of never know what's going to come around the corner. Real kind of kudos for them just to see their energy and the way that they just keep it going at all times. Like there's always something else, you know. This year already we've launched the book club, we've got the Rest Is Football in New York coming up, we've got the Rest Is Fest at the South Bank Centre later in the year. And that's, you know, on top of, that's just a few things. And I think the, I don't want to say relentless, it sounds negative, but it is like the relentless energy and innovation that they bring is like, you don't know what might be around the corner.
A future plan is coming up in September, this big podcast festival, The Rest Is Fest.
Yeah, it's really exciting. And I have to give a shout out to Kat and Joey, who are running it from a kind of internally at Goalhanger. And again, you know, my main thoughts around that are just like seeing the internal team in action is a pleasure. In terms of programming, is really exciting that they've come up with. Organising that many events is huge.
Because they're live shows, aren't they?
They're live shows.
It's a whole other area of podcasting that Goalhanger got in on quite quickly. And one of the first interviews I did when I started doing this podcast was with Tony. Kindly gave me an interview. and I remember saying to him, you know, they'd just done some huge shows with The Rest Is Politics at the Royal Albert Hall.
And that
is a whole other world of event organising, isn't it?
Yeah. And, you know, a lot of those are delivered by the teams who also produce the shows. Mm. And I think that's absolutely amazing. We also have like a core operations team who are really great at what they do. And a lot of their expertise is around like the delivery of events like that. But again, it's very rare that we bring in external people, not because we don't want to or have any reasons not to, but we have such a wealth of expertise inside the business that actually it's a pleasure that they can deliver the events. That's why it kind of feels like coming home, because there's such a sort of can-do attitude where people just want to get on with it. But yeah, there's a, you know, there's an incredible amount of stuff going on. There's a membership clubs, there's the Rest Is Fest, there's Hampton Court, there's We Have Ways Festival, there's Netflix, there's always various tours.
And you're encouraging new podcasters as well, aren't you?
Accelerator.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So absolute kind of shout out to Nikki Logan on that, who's kind of led that. She currently is development exec at Goalhanger. And yeah, I mean, it's a really exciting scheme. It's nice to be able to be given cold hard cash is quite helpful as well. And it's something that it's a privilege to be able to provide that.
You'll also be at the podcast show in May as well, won't you?
Yes, I will be. And I actually need to plug the panel that I'm on, but it feels quite a long way away. So I can't quite remember which one it is, but I know. Sorry, that's really bad, that's isn't fine. It? I prepped everyone else. Just come and see me.
Yeah,
it's dancing. This is terrible. It's with Steve Ackerman, Megan Bradshaw, who I love. I love both of them. Steve's obviously my old boss from many years ago, which is always fun. And Megan Bradshaw, we always joke that she's my work wife because we end up doing a lot of stuff together. You can see how I get so much done because I just stay like hour to hour and day to day and week to week. The fact that I might remember what I've committed to in 6 weeks' time seems a bit bananas. I know, I'm sure it'll be fine. This is very typical of me, actually, is that I know what Goalhanger will be doing there generally, and I know, you know, all the different sort of internal workings, but then when someone's like, what are you doing there, Chloe, I'm like, oh, I don't know, I've agreed to something and it's fine, but I'll get someone to brief me soon. So it will be great though.
We will see you there, Chloe. Thank you so much. It's been great. The Rest Is Fest is 4th, 5th, 6th of September.
They'll be on stage for a weekend of thrilling shows. So it's at the South Bank, 4th to the 6th of September. And I would say to anyone, a good plug, that if they want to go, they should get their tickets because I think most shows are sold out. And then we've also got a Rest Is History Festival, which is members only for the Rest Is History Club. That's the 4th and 5th of July at Hampton Court Palace.
A big thank you to Chloe Straw for being our guest. If you'd like to know more about the CIC, then go to their website, thecreativeindustries.co.uk. The ARIA's nominations party is next Wednesday, and you can see all the action on our live stream. Go to our website, audioacademy.org.uk, and you'll see all the details on our homepage. Our website is also where you can book tickets for our next Foot in the Door event at Liverpool John Moores University on the 5th of May. More speakers are being announced very soon too. Next week, the podcast comes from the Student Radio Conference in Salford, where Adam Skin will give us a flavour of SRA Con 2026. I'll see you next week.